This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Ben with me here. Ben, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Well, Arman, thanks for having me. I'm the CEO of Particle 41. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've worked with a bunch of great companies, one in travel media, a media company in finance. I've done a bunch of consulting and early stage cloud adoption. And then most recently, I started a legal services startup and sold it to LegalZoom in 3 years. I usually hold the CTO or technical co-founder role in most of the ventures. And in 2014, I started Particle 41. And at Particle 41, we do end-to-end software development from the fractional CTO all the way through to implementation and execution.
Fantastic. There is a nice story behind how you picked the name Particle 41. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I was reading, I was thinking about the name, doing all of the, required GoDaddy searches and whatnot to find something unique. And I was listening to an audiobook. I was looking at Daniel Suarez's book, Influx, great fiction book. And at the beginning of that book, Lab 44 or something like this. And so I started contemplating this idea of incorporating a number. So I looked at the periodic table and we found this element niobium and started playing with the idea of Particle 41. Niobium, if you were a child of the 80s, there was all this pop metal jewelry that was anodized. It could be given a rainbow sheen, many colors. So anodized metal jewelry was popular for a time in the 80s. And then as I researched this more in the foundry process, like when they make steel, they will add aspects of niobium to the metal to make it more flexible, like less brittle, stronger. And then they can anodize it and make it look better. So really attached to this idea of being a partner that strengthens companies, makes their solutions more flexible, and hopefully look better as well.
Fantastic. No, I like the way you played with this. The whole thing is like the element of success is on the homepage. I like that a lot. And using the story behind that element and 41. Well done. Now, you talked about CTO role, and I think, any SaaS company probably, has a CTO role in a company, right? So that's something that probably most companies doing it one way or the other. So I wonder, how do you define, based on your experience, a CTO role in a SaaS company?
Right. So I appreciate the question. I think that a lot of businesses will first decide whether they want to treat product or the idea of what the product should be, the requirements, the strategy, if they want the CTO to own the product and own the user, or if they want the CTO to strictly own implementation and technology. In a startup environment, most of the time, you don't have the budget to separate these two roles. So in my experience, I've always had one foot on the product side and one foot on the tech side. And so I am working with the users, trying to understand what they want to use, what they want the software to be. I'm defining my ICP and I'm doing all this kind of product discipline stuff. And then I'm also creating a process that really cares about, you know, rapid development. And on the tech side, you really have to kind of sweat the small things in the process. One of the things that we work really hard on is the DevOps methodology, which is, you know, if you look at Henry Ford, you know, he created the assembly line. So having, you know, normally when I'm the CTO in a startup environment, I do a lot of that DevOps stuff. I'll work on that assembly line to make sure that the developer's time really goes into the building of features. And then I can work with my user, work with the users of the software or the SaaS subscribers to understand what it is that they want to pay for, what they're willing to, you know, what earns me their subscription dues every month and what kinds of things they would like to see that it would improve their workflow. And then I'm standardizing that and turning that into the product. So I just threw a bunch of stuff on the wall. But I think at the highest level, you know, you decide whether you're putting on your execution hat as a CTO in a SaaS company or whether you're putting on the product hat, and you're somewhat thinking in two minds and trying to make sure you have a good product strategy and a good execution strategy.
The other aspect that I have seen happening in many cases is there are some roles in the company that are either internal or external, right? So if you think of sales, it's very external, mostly dealing with prospects, and, you know, some customer success is very external, always working with outside the company, working with customers. And there are some that are very internal, like chief architect or head of software development, that is always, you know, internally working on the product. Is it true to say CTO is a kind of hybrid? It's neither fully internal or fully external. Sometimes, you know, has to interface with customers, helping sales. Sometimes has to be internal and just working. Or from your perspective, you may say no, for the most part, is one way or the other.
I would say that it is more external than internal. So typically at the early stage, I am on a lot of the sales calls. I'm trying to figure out if the pitch reflects the realities of the product. You know, customer will always ask about the features that are not yet developed, right? Because you're in an early stage. So you have something you're talking to them about, you have some core value proposition, but they're always going to ask, well, what about this? And so you need to have enough awareness of your roadmap. And this is difficult for a salesperson to navigate. So in a lot of those early stage conversations, I want to be involved in sales enough to know what people are wanting. Because a lot of times you are not only selling what the software is today, but you are selling what the software will become. We don't subscribe to Netflix because of the movies that are on Netflix we already watched. We subscribe to Netflix because of the movies that they will soon create. And so, you know, that part and working with the sales team to understand the roadmap is an essential part. Also, as you grow, then recruiting and establishing your technical culture, your product development culture is, you know, very much part of the role as well. It is internal, but I think most of the internal things are things that you can find teammates to help you own. And so talking to users and focusing on those external constraints is essential in that, in really any stage of the SaaS life cycle.
Great. Now, imagine I'm one of your candidates and you wanted to see if I'm that kind of great fractional CTO that can help many of these companies, and you are interviewing me to hire me potentially. And what are the key areas that you look at and you ask those questions to say if Armin is actually a good candidate for us or not? In other words, how do you see the characteristics of a great CTO if you are interviewing to hire one for a company?
Sure. So when you're, first off, you want to have an entrepreneurial acumen. So one of the things we're looking for when we're doing that high level role is we're certainly sharing, you know, we've been there, done that. We've raised money before. We understand the language of investing. Investing is a very different vocabulary, you know. I remember, and so I'll confess a kind of a horror story. We were on one of our very first angel appointment, you know, angel meetings, you know, very first. We're early. We don't quite have the investor vocabulary. We're still learning. And the investor says, well, what's your burn rate? And we answer it with our monthly cost. So we say, oh, you know, we're spending $100,000 a month. And they had asked our burn rate. They had asked, how much money are you losing? And, you know, so we say $100,000 and everybody just kind of sits back in their seat. Whoa, you know, like, why are you losing so much money? Right. And then, you know, we weren't quite fast enough on our feet to correct the error. And so so the angel investor we were talking to, he left the meeting thinking we were losing $1 million a year, like, you know, $100,000 a month. The reality was we were actually breaking even. We were actually at zero. So the correct answer was zero. And so that vocabulary is super essential. So I will probe that vocabulary from a CTO, especially if I'm a SaaS startup that's looking to potentially raise funds. The other thing we really check on is cultural alignment. So, you know, Particle 41's culture is visibility, velocity, and vision. So we have questions in our interview process that are specifically designed to see, you know, if there's creative ways that the person has leveraged to make sure everyone is informed. What do you think about visibility? We have questions that probe into that. How they, you know, how they ensure that the dev team is moving quickly. What kinds of things do they do to ensure speed, right? One of our key secrets is, we have found that especially remote development teams do amazingly well. They get a huge productivity increase when we have 2 to 3 sprints of planned work out in front of them. The closer we are, the closer the planning process is to their actual work. Like if we're just, you know, kind of barely getting, like, just in time getting the requirements into the sprints, we find that this really chews on productivity, and it's not measurable. Right? It's just velocity is lesser. We don't know why. So getting you know, out in front of your team as a leader, we've found is essential. So then we'll probe into, how do you do that? How do you engage users? How good of a product owner and product strategist are you? And what kind of tools do you do to really determine that you're going to build the right things? I think all of that, you know, testing their entrepreneurial investor mind, testing their strategic mind, and then, you know, testing how they function under pressure and in execution. The other thing I look for is this idea of blamelessness or ownership, right? I'm a big believer in this kind of principles of extreme ownership. And I want to see that, you know, the CTO is going to take responsibility for the team. And, you know, kind of wear the team's results on their shoulders. And so that's also critical to the way I'm going to want to work with a CTO. Because if every time stuff gets tense, I say, hey, why are we not hitting this result? And they say, well, it's because the team is not performing. Then I don't know if it's the CTO that's the problem or the team that's the problem. But if I say, yep, we did, we had an issue this sprint, but these are the things I've done to resolve it. You know, we're going to swap out a teammate, because of a skills mismatch, or we're going to, bring in some additional QA for a couple of sprints, like solutioning their own problems and taking ownership is key, rather than just this, you know, oh, I'm going to blame the teammate or, you know, something that now I'm wondering if I really have a leader that I'm working with.
We are in a very particular time. We have seen COVID. So the time is like pre-COVID, during the COVID, and post-COVID.
Sure.
How do you see the impact as we are today from remote working perspective, and how does it define now the kind of work that you see for a CTO? Are the ones who are most successful the ones who can really be full remote, be always, you know, working with people in a old-fashioned way at, you know, on site, or the hybrid model that works best? What is your take on that front?
So we've always been, we were fully remote in the U.S., and then we were partially remote in our foreign offices. I think that the remote working culture is a permanent thing. No, I'm not saying that there won't be some kind of pull back into the office, but let's think about what the office, you know, pre-COVID was allowing us to do. It was allowing us to, you know, say we were getting behind on our sprints, or we were getting behind on our deliverables, right? It was allowing us to grab people right then and there and quickly plan something or have a whiteboard session. It was allowing us to do really some sloppy things in my mind, to adjust the team. And so a lot of leaders got quite used to this idea of, okay, well, if I don't do my planning work, if I'm a little bit sloppy or if something comes up, I can just go change it in real time. I can just go. And this is actually not an efficient thing. So I think leaders now have a higher demand for being planners and being strategic. So I really need to be thinking, especially in the CTO seat, what should my team be working on next week? What should they be working on next month? And I need to make sure that I have that all nailed down and ironed out in front of them, because remote working teams will thrive when I do that. They have no commute, right? They most of my teammates are quite comfortable with having a snack at their desk now because they're at home, right? So they are getting an enhanced efficiency by not having to change environment so drastically, by not having to go to the office. But if I then don't have the planning in front of them, then all the benefits I've completely eroded, because what are they doing? They're writing a little code and then asking questions, and they're going and getting stuff from different people. Now I've taken a brilliant developer and I've turned them into a coordinator, into a, you know, business analyst of sorts. Like now they're doing all of this. And so I really haven't gotten the efficiency gain that comes from remote work. So I think that that idea of planning is now falling on the leader's shoulders, and they need to take it seriously, because you will, I feel that if you're planning ahead of your team, you will get the productivity benefit from remote work. If you're under planning or under, and you're not strategic enough, then you will get a negative impact from the new remote working culture. It is going to take quite some number of years for people to want to be back into an on-premise environment. Even, you know, within months of COVID starting, you saw immediate dispersion, people going maybe to stay closer to their parents, people moving into the countryside. It's going to be very difficult for us to get that back now that we've been, you know, several years post-COVID, and a lot of folks' hiring strategies have become more diverse, and you know, we also want to take advantage of you know, the different markets around the world and how those can potentially save on cost. So yeah, I think the instruction here is clear. You know, plan ahead and make sure that your team has everything that they need to think a couple steps beyond where they are today.
Yeah, fantastic point. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. What are the top mistakes, or maybe one top mistake that you see very often that it can really, really bring down the impactfulness or the effectiveness of the CTO in the organizations?
I would say a CTO needs to have a very wide breadth. So they need to be able to communicate in the boardroom, and they also need to know for certain that there are the right kind of governance and code reviews. So it's a very broad cycle Like if you're not thinking about the assembly line and making enhancements into the way that the software is being executed, that you are making sure that the QA folks, the people who are responsible for quality, are getting involved early. So shifting QA left, looking over the software development process, looking for inefficiencies, but also keeping your eye on the prize and the results that the rest of the executive team is pursuing, is all necessary. So it's hard for me to really say one skill, but I think in our CTO advisory playbook, we always start with the goals, the OKRs, the SMART goals, whatever framework you use for your goals. And then we link a plan to that. And then we talk about, okay, how is your dev team operating? So we have kind of a, you know, like a four-prong approach to make sure that we have our goals, we have a team and a team anatomy that's going to satisfy those goals. And then we start to look at the actual execution process and see where your quality gates are. And also we look at deployment and make sure that your deployments are stable, repeatable. We do not believe in a world anymore where people are getting, you know, staying up late to do deployments, you know, flipping switches and, you know, doing a bunch of manual processes to execute software change. So we want to have this rapid change environment that has the right quality controls, so that then I can continue to work with the executive team to find their goals and just be showing the team and telling the team what steps they need to take to get closer and closer to those goals. What we're really building here is an environment that embraces change, that can change software super rapidly, can change IT environments super rapidly in a safe way. And so, you know, we have to constantly be looking at our speed of change.
Of course, during the course of, I would say, the company gain maturity, when you start from zero and there are a few people as the founding members, and one of them might be the CTO, my mistake. And then you move forward and then you have your own person in charge of the product and somebody in charge of, and as you said, extreme ownership, but taking the great, you know, ownership of software development and engineering side, and somebody taking the ownership of QA and somebody taking the ownership of DevOps. And you build the organization and then you get to the point that for any of those functions, from architecture, from software development, QA, product management, there are great owners that they take the responsibility and take care of it and do it well. They know how to plan, they know how to execute. Then at that point, how do you see a CTO can play a big role in the company with all of these great, you know, head of different functions?
Yeah. So that would go back to how my goals cascade. So if I understand the corporate goals and then I have these amazing A players, then I would be reviewing their goals on a regular clip and how they're going to measure success for their own areas. Making sure that we have those measurements in place and that data. So it's probably cliche, but the idea of, you know, helping them gamify their roles, helping them really measure and data drive their roles, so we can make great decisions, very informed decisions about staff, cost, you know, all of those things. So that leadership layer continues. Then I'm also really important to coordinate and liaise with the other executives. Do we have the right financial plan? Do we have the right investment relationships? How can I contribute to some of the other executives' core needs? And then I'm also probably looking at the biggest bang of my buck in terms of our partnerships. So who are my largest customers? And do I really understand their needs and what they need our roadmap to be? And that's kind of how I'm balancing my time once I've scaled. So I'm looking at my leads, you know, the folks that report to me. I'm making sure that they have good goals set up and that their plans are thought through. and that they're continuing to hit their goals. And then I'm looking at my other executives. So I'm managing up and out to make sure that I'm meeting all of the needs of the other executives. And then lastly, I'm looking at my largest sources of revenue and making sure that they are solid and that they have what they need to continue to be successful.
Yeah, just to summarize what you said, a great CTO will never get bored. It doesn't matter what stage of the company. There are plenty of things that the CTO needs to do. So definitely no room for being bored.
Yeah, no room for being bored. I think as you scale, you just have different sets of problems. At the early stage, you're making sure that your product is developed, that your early adopters have really shared with you their needs and that you're building into those needs. You've created an amazing change management process. You know, you're doing the continuous integration, continuous delivery. So your sleeves are very rolled up. As you grow, yeah, you do hire more folks underneath you, but now your leadership skills are being heavily challenged, and you're having a different set of problems. You have, those larger company problems than you had before. And that doesn't mean that at any one moment, some of those early stage problems like, misimplementation of code or, staffing concerns, like all of those things still could be there if your ranks are not helping you. So, I think you just, you do delegate more, but it doesn't mean you have less responsibility. As you get bigger, you probably have more.
There are plenty of user groups over the internet or different websites even that, for example, founders of SaaS companies can go and find great materials, great resources, network with peers. And the same for example, if you are head of finance like CFOs, or if you are even in development, you are doing coding, the same kind of user groups. I wonder if there is any particular, user group, maybe a website, some places that if I'm a CTO, I can go there and just, network with my peers. Is there anything like that that you might know?
I don't have something there for you. What I can say is that, the CTO's skill set is pretty diverse. So you want to be associating with like leadership in general, great bodies of knowledge around leadership. It would be a mistake to say, to not read the top leadership books, business leadership books, because all of those will be relevant to you. And then understanding methodologies and frameworks, that's where I've spent a lot of my time, understanding things like OKRs and SMART goals and how to practice that. So I would say any, executive mastermind group, is going to be clutch. I'm in a couple of mastermind groups, one specifically for service oriented businesses called Collective 54. It's a great group. And then I'm also in another mastermind group that's more faith related called Rise Up Kings. And Rise Up Kings it has four pillars: faith, family, fitness, and finance. And it's really talking about, our things we do in Rise Up Kings are really about being balanced across all four of those pillars. And there's a bunch of great business leaders in that group that I've gotten a lot of value from being a part of. But I found my buddy who's running a multi-million-dollar HVAC company can give me some real pearls of wisdom just as much as a fellow CTO. And so business is business, I think. And so becoming a good businessman makes you a better CTO.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Now, there is a point that companies start, they're very small. Perhaps a fractional CTO might be a better, setting for them, because in that case, they can get a high quality person, but they don't have to, have the cost of supporting such a great candidate. And then there will be a point that they say, well, we need a full-time CTO now. Just a fractional CTO doesn't work for us at this point. I know one of the key factors that helps that decision, of course, is the financial part of it. Can I afford to go that route? But from other aspects, what are those metrics or conditions that you look at it and say, at this point, I would advise you to have your own full-time CTO. Now you have graduated from the time that you needed a fractional CTO.
Yeah, so we do offer that. I think that really depends on a lot of factors. Sometimes the fractional CTO and investors will be a mismatch just because investors just have a demand for for someone to come in. We do feel that that a business needs to have someone own the product ownership function. And so what we've seen is like a director of product with a fractional CTO, someone who's working with the users, bringing together the requirements, working with a designer. And so we try to see who's going to really own that role. And then based on that role, that kind of core execution of coordinating between the stakeholders, if that role is met either by us in a full-time capacity or by the business with a direct hire, then sometimes that can delay the need for the CTO. But I think when you know, what we do in our CTO advisory is we just make sure that there's a clear roadmap, that there's a clear guide to total cost of ownership. Decisions around build versus buy are well analyzed. And then we do a package for audit and recommendation. If there's an existing, an existing situation going on, we'll fully audit that and then give you some recommendations. And then we also advise on the DevOps, the data science, the software development to make sure that you're executing smoothly. And so with that level of support, I think that the idea of a full-time CTO can be extended for quite some time, even into the stages of revenue growth. And let's face it, for some time now, for a while here, it's going to be hard to generate capital. So having another, six-figure plus salary on the books and the equity that goes into hiring a full-time internal CTO is a big decision. And so we've just found that with both our early and mid-stage clients, that if we can prepare the material at a low rate, not requiring equity, that we can really help them actually stay alive, live to fight another day, and still execute their product in a way that helps them meet their goals. And we love that. We'd love to partner with them in that way and make sure that they're executing. And then if they should, meet someone that they just simply can't ignore, then we love to also help that person to get up to speed and embrace the challenges that we've laid out and been working on with the company.
Okay. And my last question for you, Ben, is, what would be the book that you would recommend to the listeners?
So Extreme Ownership is a must. Like, definitely read that one. A lot of times when we're under pressure, we don't exude confidence. And so Extreme Ownership will definitely help you with some principles there. And then I'll give you two, just because I've been into also the recent book, Atomic Habits. That's definitely a must. I would give that a read. That's kind of the overall summary there is, just by modifying your habits, if you could do a 1% improvement every day, then in a year, you would have made a full turnaround. You would have made a dramatic improvement to some situation, your health, your productivity. And so constantly looking for those 1% improvements in your daily routine is, I think, huge.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us today. I enjoyed and learned from our conversation. So I appreciate it. And we will follow you in the future as well.
All right. Thank you, Armon. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.